It's the Pop-Matic Podcast for May 28th, 2015. How about May 27th, ya dingus?
I'm going to splice an IndyCar sound there. Vroom. Vroom. The Pop-Matic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me in the booth today is
Amanda,
Jeremy,
Mike,
Bill.
So the Indy 500 was May 24th, and perhaps one of your relatives lay down in a lazy boy chair, put a newspaper over his head, and took a nap.
Sounds like every race I've ever watched.
But we're going to tell you about some exciting, interesting things that have to do with racing. We have never done a racing episode before. So, should I say it? Buckle up.
Ladies, if you didn't, they would have.
Start your engines.
Pop quiz hotshot. What do you do?
We have to keep this podcast over 55 miles an hour. Podcast built on right. Sex never last. Or intense situations. I can't remember that word.
I don't remember that line as well, but it made me laugh when you tried to say it.
Pop cruise control.
Oh, these are speed references.
Yes, these are speed references,
now.
You see.
Mike, you have pole position.
Zoom into first. So, about 2.5 years ago now, I got me an exercise bike and lost about 50 pounds. Woo. Nobody here noticed. Jerks.
I didn't After know you, about... congratulations. Man.
Thank you. After about 8 months, I was excited to discover that I could watch an entire movie while riding my bike. Oh, boy. So I tried to find movies that are about an hour and a half long, including today's documentary, Senna, from 2010. I remember it was heavily promoted at the Bell Court, and it had this really cool, like, yellow poster, but that was about it. And it's a really, really good movie. It's about Ayrton Senna, a Formula One race car driver from Brazil, who's routinely voted the greatest race car driver in history by racing fans around the world.
78, I came to Europe to compete for the first time. It was pure driving. It was real racing. And that makes me happy.
He'll be ranked among the all-time greats.
How do you feel about being world champion?
It's not a bad feeling at all, is it?
Ayrton has a small problem. He thinks that he can't kill himself. And I think that's very dangerous.
You are competing to win. And if you no longer go for a gap, you're no longer a racing driver.
Senna Foss takes the lead. Senna is trying to go through on the inside.
I was treated like a criminal.
The best decision is my decision.
I can't stand this.
Walking away from the dark forces just doesn't become an option.
I was not going to give up.
So have any of your girlfriends ever asked you to go faster?
Yeah.
There was an energy, a force, a spirit. It was electrifying.
It was the last time either of them would be on the podium.
Ayrton ran out of luck.
There is a lot to go, a lot to learn, a lot to do. But I have plenty of time. Pure driving. Real racing. That makes me happy.
One of the the joys for me is that I knew nothing about him or Formula One racing. Mild spoilers. Senna was obsessed with racing since he was a small child. He started with kart racing, which looks like go-karts. I guess it is go-karts. Apparently that's like a thing as I was like researching other racers today, that they started with these kind of go-kart things and they worked themselves up. He eventually moved to England to pursue racing professionally, eventually winning a spot on a series of Formula One racing teams, most famously Lotus, I believe. The movie places special emphasis on his rivalry with French racer Alain Prost, who at the time was considered the greatest race car driver in Formula One. Their kind of racing duel, both on and off the track, comes to a head at the Japanese Grand Prix of 1989. Which was initially decided in Senna's favor, but was reversed later in favor of Prost by the FIA and FISA, FIA and FISA. The president of the organization did not hide the fact he liked Prost better. So Senna, like, thought that maybe he conspired with other judges, but, you know, he couldn't prove anything. Prost eventually retires from racing after 3 championship wins, which, without a nemesis defeat, left Senna feeling all hollow. He's all like, well, now what? I guess I'll just win for kicks, I guess. Another really random highlight of the film for me was learning that Senna dated scantily clad children's show host Shusha for a couple of years.
Shusha?
Yeah. So when she pops in, I'm like, ah! Because I knew she was from Brazil. Like, you know, she came on Fox Kids for a couple of years in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, I'm confused.
It was like post Barney.
She was so weird. Yeah.
My sister was of that age, and I was in high school, and I remember she had like a single of a Shusha song, and it was shoo, 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 sha, sha, sha. That's.
Yeah.
It never got off the ground.
Oh, my sister was on DeBarney. That was a nightmare from which I would never quite recover.
Yep.
I hate you and you hate me. The style of the documentary itself is really cool to me. Visually, it's told entirely in primary footage shot from the time, so they don't show, like, talking heads or, you know, racetracks nowadays or cars or anything. It made it feel like of the moment, which I thought was kind of neat, like it's unfolding in front of your eyes in real time almost. It's very exciting, especially when it shows footage from inside the cars as they're racing. You quickly forget that racing in real life is a super boring sport where people go in a circle for 3 hours.
Turn left.
I've heard that, like, they actually modify the cars where you turn right, but it moves left, that apparently.
So that you can switch up your muscles
you
so that you...
Yeah. Huh. Go figure. Good stuff. Senna, 2010. What do you got, Amanda?
So, I am a Hoosier, born and raised. On the playground is where I spend most of my day. Oh, sorry. Anyway, so basically I grew up, you know, growing up in Indiana, you grow up with 8500. It just is what it is. Although I've never actually been to a race, thankfully, we usually watched it. Like, we'd have to get home in time from church to have the race on in the background. And until I was older, I also thought the Indy cars were the quintessential race cars and that those stupid stock cars were their clunky redneck cousins. So if you want to fast forward, you know, just a handful of years.
I was about to say you could fast forward from Amanda and she tells us to fast forward, so we go to Brian. And I'm like, this is going to be a really quick episode for listeners.
You know, all the way to present day. I think if you had to ask me what the great cinematic wonders like the Dukes of Hazzard TV show, not movie, and Ricky Bobby, which I believe Brian may talk about later if we're lucky, I would now say that
Shake and bake!
That just happened.
Awesome.
I would now say that I am totally converted to the world of NASCAR, and I may play my snob card here and say that IndyCars are just snobbish Euro trash wannabes.
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
Oh!
That's just my humble opinion. So anyway, I struggled a little bit with what to talk about on this podcast because the library does not have any copies of my beloved Dukes of Hazzard, again, TV show, not movies. You have to clarify. But luckily...
Well, they can just drive down the street and see the car at that wax museum.
That's true.
The Dukes of Hazzard museum.
I had a dog that did that once.
Yeah. I remember driving past it recently and I was like, wow, the car really is there.
One of many. But luckily, if you look hard enough, you can almost always find a romance series about any subject. So today I bring you Aaron McCarthy's Fast Track series.
Yes!
I remember
which
these.
I know Jeremy's been really wanting to read.
I remember.
I've seen them at McKay's. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Love it. Set in Charlotte, North Carolina, which, as you know, that's where the NASCAR Hall of Fame is, as well as the mighty Charlotte Motor Speedway. These books each feature a sexy race car driver and his lady love. There are 8 books in this series. It starts out with Flat Out Sexy, and then it finishes appropriately with Final Lap. We're not a title by number 8. We're just like, are we
my
done?
My favorite is I Dig Fast Women.
It could have been Checkered Flag. But anyway, so in the beginning, we follow the racing dynasty of the Monroe family as their boys get paired off. Then, you know, they were popular enough to continue the series, so we got new friends and family. NPL has all of these books in both print and ebook form, so you can pick your poison. There is a short story called Take Me There that comes in after the fourth book. We don't have that, but if you know somebody in interlibrary loan, they can probably get it for you like I did. It's in an anthology called The Promise of Love. So my favorite book was probably number 6, Jacked Up, where Eve Monroe, sister to the brothers Monroe and PR rep for them, she has a come-to-Jesus meeting with one of her brother's crew members. There was a wardrobe malfunction where he was Jackman on the team. And as he jumped over the wall to jack the car, his jumpsuit split and kind of flashed the world of racing.
So we had to have a discussion about...
Well, it was the rear entry, but that's okay.
So this will all be cut.
These are like triple entendre.
I know, right? So that was exciting. I have to say, I like these books. They're exactly what you expect from a romance novel. You have the meet cute, the happy times. Oh no, conflict arises and a fight breaks out. We cry. And then we kiss and make up and all happily ever after. Next book, please. So I have to admit that this series is partially why it took me a year and a half to finish Monuments Men, which I talked about last week. Because I kept reading these books instead of reading the one I was supposed to. So if you liked fast guys and fast books, this series is for you. I want to go fast.
All right. I love it. And those the covers of those books are hot as North Carolina asphalt.
Yes. All right, Mr. Jeremy.
No,
it's Mr. Bill.
Well, thank you.
Speaking of hot guys.
If we went in a different order, the world would fall apart. We'd all be fired.
Jeremy, you go. We're breaking.
Kaboom.
Auto racer Dick Trickle once cited.
The only reason I'm bummed that you went before me is because I also have a reference to Dick Trickle.
Dick Trickle. Okay.
Sure.
Real human being.
Oh, wow. I would have gone by Richard.
Racing is my blood. I can't quite get it out yet.
Jesus.
That was a total setup.
Mike's going to need a minute.
My mind is blown. I'm sorry. Wow.
This review wasn't funny when I read it.
Yeah, right. Sure. Ten lines of 20 set up. Okay.
In 1973, going back to my era, a movie came out called The Last American Hero, starring the great Jeff Bridges, directed by journeyman director Lamont Johnson.
Hey, the race you saw was won by a car that was bought, torn apart, rebuilt, and driven by me.
His name is Junior Jackson. Instead of a white stallion, he rides a black Mustang.
Hold on, buddy. Load of coal.
He learned about cars running whiskey in the Carolina hills.
Looks pretty suspicious, huh?
You set your evidence on fire.
Now, this is the only life I know. And I'm not going to stop now, but my boys are going to have something different.
He wiped out the pack in the Demolition Derby.
He's beautiful. This kid is beautiful.
Make a move on me, I'll rip his lip off, give it to you for a key ring.
He tore up the track in the grueling Hickory 500.
You don't like taking orders, drive for yourself.
He drives his car like he lives his life. Flat out.
Look, I won that race fair and square.
What's the prize money?
$1,000+ extras.
Well, invite me in. You look gorgeous.
Well, you ain't seen nothing yet. Wait till I put my shoes on.
What sign are you?
Go for it, I guess. I had pretty good luck with them so far.
Hey, this is Junior. Marge?
She's busy. You know, in today's grown-up world, you gotta obey rules and regulations.
End up nowhere!
It took him 20 years to find out who he was, and 2 laps to let the world know. Jeff Bridges, the last American hero.
It was based on an article in Esquire magazine called The Last American Hero is Junior Johnson, Yes, by Tom Wolfe of the Right Stuff fame. You can go online and read the entire article if you're so interested.
The essay can also be found in Tom Wolfe's classic collection, The Candy-Colored Tangerine Flake Streamlined Baby, which the library has many copies of.
The movie and the article deals with race car driver Elroy Jackson Jr. or the legend Junior Johnson, race car driver. Junior Johnson was the son of a bootlegger, and Mr. Johnson was a bootlegger himself who went on to become a famous stock car racer in rural South. From the start, I should say I hate racing. It's not my glass or cup of tea.
You're almost like three for three here. Yeah.
However, I do enjoy The Last American Hero as it depicts Junior Johnson as an independent individual who bucks the system and authority figures, which is something I personally appreciate. All I can say is, if you don't like racing, that's okay, because The Last American Hero is about nonconformity at its heart. Also, a little fun fact is, I've Got a Name by Jim Croce was introduced in this movie and went on to become a hit. Now, a lot of you don't even know who Jim Croce is.
Jeez Louise.
Thank God.
Jim Croce, greatest hits on cassette. I wore that out. Okay.
Wow.
So, The Last American Hero, we still have a copy in the system. I do highly recommend it. Jeremy.
All right. So,
what's your Dick Trickle card?
Yeah. Let's skip ahead to Dick Trickle.
I was a school. I went to college in Bowling Green, Kentucky. And in college, in my first apartment, I lived across the street from the farm fraternity. It was called Farmhouse. They would say, "Whose house?" And then everyone else would go, "Farmhouse!" Awesome! And they came, they won the tug of war competition all against all those Greek guys, and they were covered in mud. "Whose house?" And when Dale Earnhardt died, I looked up my front window, and those dudes lowered their flag to half staff. And I thought, I don't understand these people, and I never will. Because I also do not like racing. So if you describe any sport or game, it pretty much sounds dumb, but this is a description of NASCAR or racing. I also am not going to make a distinction between those things. Let's drive in a circle. Let's drive all these cars in a circle until someone wins or someone dies. And then even better, let's let the winner chug some milk in the hot heat, because that'd be awesome, right? Also, let's cover the car in advertisements and celebrate people with names like Dick Trickle. That doesn't sound like the way of spending, a good way to spend.
This is like a poetry slam down from a couple weeks ago on racing, if we cared.
It doesn't sound like a good way to spend Sunday afternoon to me, and I've spent Sunday afternoons with this because my dad likes this, and so maybe my dislike of that is a daddy issue that is...
I'm going to tease
it out. I'll go there.
I think you just played the daddy issue card.
So, there is one thing that could make this appealing to me, and that's murder. So, and the author Ib Melchior knew this too, despite having the name, made-up sounding name of a character in a sci-fi novel. This was it's a fantastic name. He was a very real man, a real boy. He was a director, screenwriter, and author of short stories and novels. He wrote and directed 1959's The Angry Red Planet and 1964's The Time Travelers. Co-wrote the screenplay for Robinson Crusoe on Mars, and pertinent to our conversation here. He wrote the short story The Racer, which served as the basis for the film Death Race 2000.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yes. I love this movie.
So Unfortunately, we don't have Death Race 2000 in our collection. We do, however, have a film on Hoopla called Death Racers, starring Insane Clown Posse, and it's basically a remake of Death Race, starring Insane Clown Posse.
No.
You
mean to clown car?
Yes.
So excited for a second.
Well, we do have the story, The Racer. It's available in an anthology called Ackermanthology, edited by the one and only Forrest J. Ackerman.
Cool.
He's like the Stan Lee of science fiction fandom. He edited Famous Monsters of Filmland, collected memorabilia, and was basically there at the start of science fiction fandom in America, except he called it like scientifiction. I can't even say what he called it.
Scientifiction. Ackerman also claims to have coined the term sci-fi.
And it also sounds like he claimed to have invented cosplay, too, which is kind of awesome. Ooh. So, The Racer by Melchior is a story of a very popular cross-country race in which drivers earn points for making the best time, but also for killing and maiming innocent spectators. There you go. Like, do you like? You don't really need anything else from a short story.
I think. You know, the movie had John Carradine or David Carradine as Frankenstein.
There's no Frankenstein in the story. So that's kind of the thing. The story
is a hand grenade.
The story is like a little kernel that sort of planted the seed of the film. You know what I mean? Like it has like that self seriousness of like message science fiction. You know, because the main driver Willie is like sort of conflicted about, like, oh, I'm killing these people, and for what purpose? And and like a little girl calls him a butcher, and that kind of haunts him as he's driving across the country. So the story is good. It's very short. It's just a few pages. I like the movie much better, and it's interesting to see the contrast between the two, because the movie,
it's Sylvester Stallone as Machine Gun Joe Paterbo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the movie is like very tongue in cheek and also kind of gruesome and stuff. So this story was originally published in 1952 in what was essentially, according to Forrest Ackerman, a poor man's Playboy called Escapade magazine. It's a fun story, which if you haven't seen Death Race 2000, is a nice lead up to watching that. So I don't know if I can make myself watch Death Racer starring Insane Clown Posse. Their video about magic is pretty good, but
magnets. How do they work?
Magnets. How do they work? It's a miracle. Is that what it's called?
I believe it's called miracles.
Yeah.
I see miracles all around me. Stop and look around. It's all astounding. Water, fire, air, and dirt. Magnets, how do they work? And I don't want to talk to a scientist. Y'all motherfuckers flying and getting me pissed. Solar eclipse and vicious weather. 15,000 juggalos together. And I love my mom for giving me this time on this planet. Take nothing for granted.
It's a miracle that Insane Clown Posse is still around.
I've got something to add. No snob card or anything like that. But
Bill loves Insane Clown Posse.
who are they? No. But I know people are getting sick of me ringing up my Legends of Film, but I talked with two people who worked on that movie on the podcast. Tina Hirsch, the film editor. I have an edit film. She talks about working with Corman. And also the assistant director, Lewis Teague, who went on to direct Cat's Eye and other movies. But he talks about working on that film, too. But he has a role. He was the guy who played Matador to the car. The stuntman didn't show up that day, so he just jumped in and did the shot.
I asked him about doing that scene.
That's cool. And so those are two on the Legends of Film podcast. Nice. And I love that movie, too.
Oh, well, you know, everybody would taste. Let's ignore the remake with Jason Statham.
There's a remake?
The semi-sequel called Cannonball. I was not a fan of it.
Yeah. Death Race 2000 is in YouTube, and in its entirety, and it was posted by a YouTube account called Public Domain Movies, so maybe it's in the public domain.
You know, I bought a cheap DVD copy of it. It's one of those you can find it for $5 on some DVD. But it's like Night of the Living Dead, but I think.
The Shout Factory put out this great DVD with two audio commentaries and documentaries and all this stuff.
Cool.
Go spend the buck. It's worth it if you love that movie.
All right, as is typical, I'm going to have to go pro after you guys take it off the rails.
Well, the going got weird, man.
So the difference between Indy cars and stock cars. Indy cars are like made for racing. They're cars that are made for racing. They have open wheels, you know, like the wheels are by themselves. Mm-hmm. And stock cars are called stock cars because hypothetically they're stock from the factory, which regular people would race. That's how the sport started, right? So now, even though the stock cars that they race in NASCAR aren't actually the factory stock cars, that's where
they've
been
upgraded.
I thought it was like
that's where that
it's
comes.
The same basic frame, I think. Like it's like a Monte Carlo, still a Monte Carlo, but it's they've jacked everything. Yeah,
I thought it was like indie rock, like which is bands from Indiana.
Yeah, all two of them. It's not a big category.
France. Kenneth Baby, or not Prince.
I say Prince is not from Indiana. Prince is from Minnesota.
He's Michael Jackson,
Michael Jackson.
Kenneth Babyface Edmonds.
Yeah, there's a highway named after him in Indianapolis.
It's my favorite road in the world. Because it's the Kenneth Babyface Evans Highway. It's awesome.
So the one I wanted to talk about today was actually NASCAR. I think like most Americans, when I think about racing, I think about NASCAR, not IndyCars so much. I don't know. but the movie that I wanted to talk about is the classic, Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby.
Guess how fast we're going now?
I don't care, I'm having a baby!
You just passed the hospital!
Ricky Bobby was born. Become the fastest man alive.
That's my boy, Ricky!
Woo! Dear Lord, baby Jesus, I want to thank you for my family, my two beautiful sons, Walker and Texas Ranger, and of course, my red-hot smoking wife, Carly.
Woo!
Mm.
Ow!
You know, it might be cool if sometime you could set me up for a win.
You can't have two number ones.
Yeah, you can. That makes 11.
But no man stays on top.
Absolutely, ma'am. I'd love to sign your baby. You're not going to want to wash that forehead.
Forever.
Well, the big news is that NASCAR has gone French.
I am coming for you, Ricky Bobby.
He's in the wall.
Uh-oh. Yep, I'm flying through the air. This is not good.
Ah, I'm on fire. I'm on fire.
You're not on fire, Ricky Bobby.
Help me, Jesus. Help me, Jewish God. Help me, Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise, use your witchcraft and get the fire off me!
From the guys who brought you Anchorman and the 40-year-old virgin.
The doctor told us you can walk.
It's all in your head.
I am so paralyzed! You want to see what my life is?
Don't you stick that knife in your leg.
Hmm? Oh, man!
Will Ferrell.
Ricky Bobby is not a thinker.
Give me a fastball, twist of lime.
What the hell's a fastball?
Oh! Give me another.
Ricky Bobby is a driver.
Yeah, it's the real deal down there.
Ricky Bobby wins it in reverse.
What does that do? Does that blow your mind?
That just happened.
You don't drive with your eyes. You got to feel the road.
The story of a man who could only count to number one.
I'm embarrassed. I really thought I could feel it.
Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby.
You gotta learn to drive with the fear. Oh my God!
There ain't nothing more frightening than driving with a live cougar.
Oh,
Ricky, control your heart rate!
God, I can't control my heart rate! I got a cougar on me!
I just want to jump in here. This may be record-setting because this may be the first time that Brian and I both love the same thing on a podcast. Because I love this movie.
What's
the best movie ever?
Shake and Bake. What's not to love?
I tell you.
So, if you aren't familiar, Will Ferrell plays Ricky Bobby.
Ricky Bobby.
Okay, the most badass stock car racer in the world. And his friend Cal, played by John C. Reilly. They're NASCAR drivers. They thrill fans with their Shake and Bake. Will Ferrell usually always wins, though. He always takes first place.
You're first, you're last.
Exactly. But then he gets into an accident, loses his mojo, and his best friend Cal starts winning all the races and eventually steals his hot wife and his big house. So Ricky Bobby loses his mojo, but can Reese Bobby, Ricky's derelict absentee father, convince him to get his act by together by giving him racing wisdom, you know, enough racing wisdom to burn rubber once again, maybe with the help of a cougar named Karen, who knows? But there's a bigger challenge on the horizon, a snotty French import named Jean Girard. Perhaps this
from
is...
Formula 1.
Yes, who previously was a Formula 1 racer, which perhaps was inspired by the true story of Senna and his mm-hmm. nemesis.
Yeah.
Okay.
Jean Girard, who is played brilliantly by Sacha Baron Cohen, wants to embarrass America by becoming the best NASCAR driver alive. Can Cal and Ricky bury the asphalt hatchet and defeat Girard before the frou-frou Frenchman takes the checkered flag? Now, some people have said to me, I cannot believe that you like this movie. Now,
I think everyone here is kind of agog that you like it, yes?
Here's where there might be a cleave between us.
Maybe. Oh, here we go.
I don't know, there's some weird reason you like the reason.
Instead of it being funny and amazing.
The underlying class.
Because Elvis Costello shows up in one scene.
No, that's why I like it.
The reason I love this movie is because I hate NASCAR and makes fun of it the whole time. It's the heart, which, on a related note, I'm very excited about Zoolander 2. But totally related to this movie, there's that whole scene, like, you know when Ben Stiller took a Zoolander to France, he got reamed by the press because they're like, what do you have against fashion? That was a bad French accent, wasn't it?
What do you have against fashion? Mon weed, monsieur.
Yeah, so like, they didn't get it.
Play fashion. Está bien.
So that's my faux snob card. This movie is actually truly hilarious. And the character of Reese Bobby, his father, anything you need to know about me, just real quick, that character. That's also why I feel good being a Yankee living in the South, because I'm so much like that dude. I fit in with certain elements.
You guys turn out of an Applebee's?
Okay.
For fun. Just like he does, just because I'm bored.
Did that movie come out before his George Bush one-man show? Because it keeps almost like doing the same, like just playing George Bush.
I feel
George
like it was out of this. What was it? He was a presidential candidate on some show. It wasn't The West Wing.
No.
He was like a presidential candidate, or like was vice president on some show, like at the same time this movie came out.
Will Ferrell was?
His dad.
His dad was in, Gary Cole was in Office Space, right?
Yeah.
He was in something else. Yeah.
Brady Bunch movie.
Yeah, he was the dad in the Brady Bunch.
He was the Midnight Caller. And you don't remember that show. Never mind.
Also, the person who has a really small role in this movie that I love is Molly Shannon as like the don't give an F wife of the rich race team owner. She's great.
And Jane Lynch plays his mom.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Yeah. best role ever.
What? Yeah. Anyway,
I need to see it again. I've only seen it one time.
Now, since we're all sort of, you know, sharing our love of this movie.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I would say for people that don't like racing, and I've never been to a race.
Been to a race.
But I've always heard that if you go to the race, it's a far more visceral experience. So it's like the vroom, 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 like when the cars go around, the earth shakes and it's incredibly freaking loud. Yeah. And you get that adrenaline rush that you get like when you go to a rock concert and it's super loud and there's all these people and there's like a surge of energy. And then that just happens repeatedly over and over again. So it's like physical experience far more than like watching it on TV where you could take a nap to the white noise. So,
oh, man.
You know. And with that, you should check out Talladega Nights.
I always remember going to see Final Destination, one of the Final Destinations, and they showed that as a preview before. And I went to see Final Destination at this funky time, and there were like only two other people in the theater. Well, after the previews of Talladega Nights, and it was just us three people just dying laughing at the previews. I mean, it was so funny. We're just going, he's running around in his underwear screaming for Tom Cruise. Yeah.
Use your magic to put the fire out.
Maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. It's tickling our fancy this week. Bill?
Tickling My Fancy is a new book called Missoula, Rape and Justice System in a College Town by John Krakauer. Stephen King and Clive Barker have two new books coming out, and I can tell you right now it won't be as horrifying as Mr. Krakauer's book. Missoula, Rape and Justice System in a College Town is a disturbing yet engrossing account of rape on a college campus. Also, how the justice system would not aid the victims in such crimes. The Kafkaesque tale is once again nonfiction, and you won't believe it once you read it. Now, when I did not read this book, I listened to the CD audio, and you get so worked up about it and mad that I would probably recommend reading this book.
Not in the car.
Yeah. I mean, don't listen to it. You should probably read it, because it's extremely disturbing. They're graphic in nature, the description. So, but it's, I shouldn't say enjoy, but yet I highly recommend the book.
It's the last podcast. You guys may remember.
I
made a reference to this book in passing, but I said it's too dark, so it probably won't come up again on the Popmatic podcast. I said we're probably not going to do. I said we're probably not going to do the college rape episode.
Yes, we tied it in with the priest love episode.
Yes.
Well, it had a profound effect on me, and it's just I have to recommend it.
And in some ways, too, this is an auto-correction because I don't have to say it in the corrections now that the book that I was speaking of was Missoula.
So you didn't name it.
Yeah. I didn't name it.
Nice.
So what super depressing thing do you have, Jeremy?
It's not super depressing. I guess depending on who you are. So we're recording this a week before you hear it. I don't know if that's supposed to be a secret. Is that supposed to be a secret?
Spoiler alert!
Keep behind the count, the curtain there.
But tonight is the final David Letterman show, and I've been watching the last couple of nights just because I wanted to, because I'm not going to see him. I don't regularly watch. But last week, I saw a clip of Norm MacDonald's final appearance on there, his final stand-up appearance. I don't remember, he didn't say how many times he'd been on there, but he's on there doing stand-up, telling really funny jokes about LSD and Germany and identification and all this stuff. Just really funny stuff. And, you know, if you like Norm MacDonald, he was totally great. And then at the end, he says, you know, I understand this is going to be my last time on the show. And everyone kind of gets a laugh. And he says that he first saw David Letterman when he was 13 years old. And then he starts to choke up and kind of is like, and I think people think it was.
When Norm MacDonald was 13?
Yeah.
Okay.
Human emotions. Yeah. Norm MacDonald.
Norm MacDonald chokes up and he says, like, I first saw David Letterman when I was 13 years old on this. He went to a taping of a talk show in Canada and he did this joke and he tells the joke and he's like crying a little bit and is saying, you know, just how much David Letterman meant to him. Because he loves he's like, I love stand-up. And here he was doing this joke. And, like, he's standing there doing stand-up in front of this man who inspired him to do this stuff. And he's, like, crying. And he says, I love you. And David is like, oh, my God, I love you, too. And they kind of hug it out and stuff. And Norm is like, and there's just a really, it's a really sweet, I mean, not to mention hilarious for the first 7 minutes or however long he does. But, like, the last bit of him just, I'm not choking up. Yeah, I'm trying.
Need a hanky?
No.
You okay, Jeremy?
I'm okay. I watched it again last night with my wife, and she was like, oh, God. She was crying, and I was just tearing up a little bit. But it's incredibly, incredibly sweet and hilarious, and it's worth checking out. It's on YouTube and elsewhere.
All right, Bill's will make you rage, and yours will make us cry.
Yeah,
but tears of joy.
We're crying for two different reasons.
Tears
here.
Of joy.
Mine will be tears of joy. Oh boy. Alas, I'll not be here next week as I'll be on vacation in sunny Florida. I plan to do all the standard touristy stuff, like enjoy a freshly squeezed no pulp orange juice with the adjunct professor Burt Reynolds. He really is one. I'm not lying.
You're gonna drink orange juice with Burt Reynolds, really?
No.
Oh.
I'm now.
You know, joke stuff here. Offer my blood to the undead conquistadors at Rural St. Augustine. And partake in the sights of the Salvador Dali Museum in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Including a hologram of Alice Cooper.
Oh, cool. Nice. Oh, boy. So, one of those is real. In the 40s, a Mr. Jeremy Spoiler.
Please be the ghost one.
In the 40s, a wealthy couple of art patrons from Cleveland decided to collect Dali's art. They were really, like, impressed. Their collection became so massive. Hey, you know, some of these people collect art because it'll be worth money later. They actually liked it. You know, it was different.
I think that's great.
Their collection became so massive that they started hosting retrospectives in their house. They eventually decided to house their collection in its own museum, settling upon a warehouse in St. Petersburg, Florida, which eventually became the largest collection of Dali's stuff in the Western Hemisphere. Like, you know, other than this one museum in Spain, so the second biggest. I'm a big Dali fan. I'm a big Dali fan, not flan, though I do enjoy the occasional flan.
Say you like crepes.
Say it, Pepe Le Pew.
The Vicky Bubby. For years I planned to go, but that involves money, which I didn't have. But now I do have money. Oh, boy. So I plan on blowing most of the money I saved on Dali crab. Expect to be CV woozy from blood loss from the undead conquistadors. But in case in a, I'll stop the world and melt with you your watches shirt in a couple of weeks. So excited. Can I hide it? What do you got, man?
That's impressive, man.
I have to taunt you, though, because I have a pencil from that museum. Somebody brought me back.
If you go to New Smyrna Beach.
It says, I'm not mad.
Cool.
It's yellow. So apparently today is split your jumpsuit day in my world. Because last week I went to see Pitch Perfect 2, which begins with the Barnum Bellas performing for President Obama And if you've seen Pitch Perfect 1, one of the characters, her name is Fat Amy, played by the wonderful Rebel Wilson, comes down out of the ceiling like one of those like gymnast Cirque du Soleil like rope spinny things. And she gets stuck, and then her body splits open, and she kind of flashes everyone, which is sets up the need for Bella's redemption. In the last movie, the troublemakers were the foes. In this movie, it's the German group Das Sound Machine. And somewhere Falco is crying.
Kraftwerk.
Yeah, Das ist gut. So I was afraid that the second movie was going to be stupid, because sometimes with movies like this, they're like, we don't need writers for this. We're just popular. But it really wasn't. It was pretty good. I can't say it's better than the first movie, but it definitely held its own. It was one when it was over, I just wanted to go back and watch it again. And we actually had a pretty full theater, and it was a pretty good crowd. They got kind of rowdy, too, which was, you have to with this movie. It's funny. The library has the soundtrack on order, or you can stream it on Hoopla. And so far, it's my favorite movie of the year. My husband actually went gaga for it, because there's a riff off in the middle with a bunch of different a cappella groups, and the Green Bay Packers have a group. They make a cameo appearance. He's a huge Packer fan, so he would be happy if I said go Pack. So.
And that movie kicked Mad Max's Fury Road.
Take that, Australia.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because Rebel Wilson is from Australia, New Zealand. It was good. Very worth the money.
All right. I actually finally read a book.
From beginning
to
end?
All the way through?
Yeah, is this halfway through again?
No, I read a book until the end.
Nice.
Right? Mm-hmm. It was Eat the Document by Dana Spiotta. It's about two people who did things in the 60s that they now regret, and now their lives are very, very separate, and they live far apart, and they don't know each other. And it cuts between these characters back and forth, and eventually you find out like what their relationship was back in the 60s. So it's all the characters are the people in their lives now, and all the people in their lives in between the 60s and now. So it's very kaleidoscopic. I don't want to spoil anything about what they did in the 60s that like brought them together, but also took them apart. But a good companion book would be Days of Rage, America's Radical Underground, the FBI, and the Forgotten Age of Revolutionary Violence by Brian Burrow that just came out. There's also a lot of music geekdom, record collecting, especially about the Beach Boys in this book, too. That sort of laces the story. And I listened to it on audio, and I don't think I would have fully figured out the big reveal about what they did or how they know each other, except I love this book so much that I just started doing a little more research on it, and it kind of gave it away. Now, if dedicated podcast listeners might know that I probably at some point talked about Dana Spiotta's last novel, Stone Arabia, and I'm actually glad that I read Stone Arabia first, because it kind of feels like a little novella that sort of maybe came out of the characters of Eat the Document. So I'm glad I read that first, because I probably enjoyed it more, having never read her work before. Truly great book, Eat the Document by Dana Spiotta. I said movies and books and films about war last week, and obviously that doesn't really make any sense. I think when I say movies and films, I mean the same thing.
Oh, well, right? You're a snob at heart. Oh. You believe in film and not these motion pictures.
Can we just call
the plebes enjoy?
Can we just call the corrections corner Brian's corner? It just seems like you mostly correct yourself.
Well, he's the one that likes it the most.
Well, he has to listen to it a bunch of times to edit it.
I know.
He knows exactly all the flaws.
That's true.
This may be cut, but because I know the most about the things that I'm talking about, I know when I get things wrong. So if you guys omit things about things that you researched, I don't know when they're wrong.
I gotcha. Hey, man, once I put it out there.
I know what, you know. That's why I like listening to it again, because that way I find out, you know, when I mumbled something.
Like, what did I really say?
I guessed her.
Exactly.
Truth,
obviously,
man.
I guess.
In the moment, I didn't know that I said that. And if you, the audience, ever notice we get something wrong, even if you live in Perth, Australia, we want to know about it. Leave us a comment on the off-the-shelf blog, call the library, complain, just let us know. Thanks. We had mentioned a movie about crazy family of hillbillies that dance and occasionally commit crimes in West Virginia. That was The Wild and Wonderful Whites of West Virginia, which should be on order shortly from the library. Were there any other corrections?
No, I think we're good.
All right. For more information about West Virginia hillbillies, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by Adam
D. Dude.
Next week,
Biff.
Superhero.
Pow. Bop.
Yep.
I'm Batman.
I'm trying to think of a Superman theme.
What was that crappy-ass racing movie with Tom Cruise?
Days of Thunder?
Days of Thunder.
That's where he met Nicole Kidman.
Yeah,
hello.
Man.
That was the beginning of the dynasty.
Don Simpson was a genius.
They met on, like, Far and Away or something.
No, they met in Days of Thunder first. Far and Away.
They fell in love on Far and Away. They fell apart in Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a trilogy.
It's like Kubrick broke them up.
Well, one of those is a great movie.
I know. Days of Thunder was pretty good.
Days of Chunder, more like it.
Was the Days of Thunder just Top Gun, except on a racetrack?
Yeah, instead of a plane. Instead of, yeah, yes.
Without Anthony. Without same producer, without director, oh, really? Everything.
Don Simpson died early because he was too much for this one. Anyway.
Whoa. Tony Scott, I'm confused.
Don Simpson's a comic book artist.
I thought he was a producer.
Creator of Megaton Man.
He did Savage Dragon, too? Is that the same dude?
No, that's Eric Larson. They did a crossover, Savage Dragon versus Megaton Man.
I have vague memories of that.
Yeah.
Maybe. I know who Don Simpson, the film producer, is, who died early because he was an overindulgent dude.
Really?
But he produced all those horrible Tom Cruise movies.
Which one?
Oh. I was going to say, there are a lot to choose
from. Yeah.
Days of Thunder?
Oh.
Where I come from, it doesn't matter which end of the car goes around the corner first.
Hold on a minute. Don't you think we ought to talk?
What, about how I'm going to run?
Sure. About how you manage to live as long as you have.
There's nothing I can't do with a race car.
You run good.
Thank you.
And we'll see how you do in the crowd.
We can fix it right here. So what's it going to be?
About racing so much.
Speed.
Come up here and do it. I'll take you to a race.
I can't. I'm a doctor. I'm Cole.
I don't want you to hold a bad opinion of Cole. He needs reassurance from you that he's okay. And after all, you're his doctor.
How long before you find out if you're really good? Are you really lucky?
Now you're scared. You're scared.
He doesn't believe you can drive anymore.
I'll take your word for what a car can do. But I'm not taking anybody's word for what I can do, because nobody knows.
You get back in that car, you'll die.